Tom and Lorenzo's Pop Style Opinion Fest.
We're here to render judgment on the worlds of celebrity, pop culture, television, and fashion.
Strap yourselves in for some hardcore opinionating, darlings.
This is Tom and Lorenzo's Pop Style Opinion Fest.
We're Tom and Lorenzo.
And this is the Pop Style Opinion Fest. Hello, kittens. Welcome back to another edition of the PSO. I am the T in your T-Lo, Tom Fitzgerald. I'm here with the low in your T-Lo, Lorenzo Marquez, my lovely husband.
Hello.
How are you this fine morning,
Lorenzo? I am wonderful.
Fantastic. I am wonderful as well. Very happy because we just completed a very dense and heavily researched writing project, which I cannot tell you the details
of. I know.
But we have that giddy next morning feeling of like, done and done. If you're a writer, you know what that feels like. Sorry to be so teasy about this, but we haven't gotten the go-ahead, so we're just going to keep teasing you on it. Aside from that, it's been a busy-ass week on the cultural front.
I know. Every time I go on Twitter, there's something else.
I know. Twitter is so depressing. It really is, but I don't know what to do because it's such a part. It's my job. I can't not.
Right.
You know, and in fact, I saw someone say something on Twitter the other day that I was like, you know what? I'm so glad someone said this. If I said it, I would sound so bitter. But I really can't stand when celebrities and high-ranking journalists are all talk about what a garbage dump Twitter is with their millions of followers.
I know.
It's like, look, if you want to get off it, get off it. But what this person was saying was. Because he was a blogger or a writer, I think, and he said, I have to be on Twitter to promote myself. That's the way it is now.
Right.
So it's really obnoxious for these really entitled people with huge platforms.
And it's where I get most of my interesting news as well. But at the same time, you hit with so much crap. And you just have to, embrace
wade
it.
Wade through it.
But it's very hard to write
and focus when you've constantly got that thing.
Right. I used to read my feed at the gym all the time, but I don't do it anymore because it's very distracting and sometimes I get annoyed.
I can tell when you're reading your feed.
I know.
You usually tweet something and I'm like, ooh, he just saw something.
But I'm trying not to do it because it really interferes with my mood and I need to be more focused when I'm doing other things.
Truth. Anyway, a lot of stuff happened this week. And it was kind of a discussion this morning of, well, how much of this are we covering? Because there's a lot. And we did settle on the fact that the big, celebrity or pop culture story of the week is the article in The Atlantic about Bryan Singer's accusers coming out.
Right.
Director Bryan Singer's accusers coming out. And we talked about this ahead of time. We were like, so are we covering this? And then we both immediately came to the conclusion, look, we went hard in on people like Harvey Weinstein and Louis C.K. And as gay men, we have to turn around and do the same thing when it's someone like Bryan Singer who's gay. We did come out hard against Kevin Spacey when his charges came out. But, just for the sake of consistency, this was not a story we wanted to ignore. Having said that, it's gross. I was rereading the Atlantic story this morning. And this is something I've encountered a lot this week on social media, in gay Twitter, with this idea of you just know things because you're gay. There's just a certain knowledge.
Yes. I had this conversation with you last night. I was like, I read the article. Go ahead. You said,
this one guy said, he's like, sometimes my straight friends ask me how I know something. And the only thing I can say is from being gay. That's how I know that.
Right. Things that were said in the article,
You've heard exactly. Or you went to gay message forums, like Data Lounge was a gossip forum that we used to go to back in the day. We don't go to anymore, but, that was a place. That's probably the first place I heard it. Any of the like, oh no, they didn't, or Lipstick Alley, you heard about the Singer accusations going back 10 years. Gawker wrote articles about it back when Gawker was a thing.
That's pretty much the assumption on Twitter, is that a lot of people were saying that, this is not news in the sense that we knew about it.
But, I have to admit, I knew there was a underage boy component to this, a very seedy boy component to this story, but reading it, I was like, oh wow, 13, holy shit.
Right.
Like, I didn't realize it.
Well, the article whoever wrote the article, I forget the guys, it's two guys. Anyway, it's going to be on our reading list.
Reading list.
My point is that they did a lot of research.
Alex French and Maximilian.
There you
Potter.
Go. And they did their homework.
Yeah.
And the victims describe rooms and the interior of the apartments or houses and everything. I mean, they detailed everything. They did their best, I'm sure, to make sure that this sounded, legit, that the victims were actually saying.
And I have to say, I was reading the story and I'm like, could I accurately describe rooms that I was in 22 years ago? And
then you could.
No, I actually couldn't.
Really?
But that was a to me, it sold how traumatic this was for
True,
them.
That's a good
that
point.
That the details
that's
were burned
point.
On their
yeah,
brains,
yeah, yeah.
that they could accurately describe a room they saw in a party they went to 20 years ago. That's
right.
damning. I always come back to Christine Blasey Ford's line, "Indelible in the hippocampus is the laughter." It covers so much. It was such a well-phrased way of describing psychic trauma. She was, of course, the one who testified against Kavanaugh, the Supreme Court justice. Anyway,
what I find I'm always, when those stories come out, I'm always interested in and surprised in a way with their reaction. You know, it was like Kevin Spacey blaming the whole thing and being gay and all that and coming out and just take the opportunity and twisting it and making
it. Singer called this homophobia.
And then Singer calling it a homophobic smear. You know, they're just like,
that's
come
just not
on.
Gonna fly. That is
it's not
gonna
fly.
Gonna fly.
It's not gonna fly. And you're just doing a disservice. For the community.
Right.
You just no. That's not what it is.
No,
that's not what it is.
We don't stand with you on this, buddy.
No, right.
No
exactly.
Fucking way.
Exactly.
Pardon my language.
But it's a strong case.
It's a strong case. Anyway, yeah. Going back to my point, we, you and I both heard these stories. Every gay man I know knew the Bryan Singer
stories,
and or knew some
heard
of
it. Let's
Singer
not say
yeah. exactly
heard of it.
But I was really struck. I was really blown away by the specificity of these stories, the age of the people involved, and just how insidious. I mean, they groomed them and everything in that classic, pedophile manner. And it's just a very disturbing story, made even more so because he is still, people in Hollywood knew this. He's still getting work. He was the director
direct,
of Bohemian Rhapsody, which is nominated.
And he's about to direct another one.
He's about to direct Red Sonja, and they're not pulling him off
of it. That's
Red
what they
Sonja
said so
is
far.
An adaptation of a female comic pulp character. Pardon me. Who is actually a victim of sexual assault. So why do you want to put this character in the hands of a man
who has
these kind of charges against him? It's all very gross. And as people who spoke out against, Harvey Weinstein and Bill Cosby and everybody else, it behooves us as gay men to, and I say this to the gay men listening, it behooves us as gay men not to defend this behavior, not to stand with him. He needs to answer for this behavior, point blank. That's the bottom
I agree.
Line.
And also the fact that, people need to understand that that's not how every homosexual out there behave, and this is something.
That's
to
why.
Be,
that's
to
a
be
big
criticized.
Reason why.
Yeah.
We have to say, no.
That's not normal.
This is not our norm. This is not something we support. Because when you read the story, there was like this network of gay men who were grooming these boys.
Right.
So, anyway.
Using their power to just get what they want and
yeah. And there's also the people, we've made a couple snide comments, mostly on social media, but I think we said it in a post this week as well about Rami Malek's involvement with Bryan Singer. And just to clear something up here, you could really go on a total witch hunt if you went after everybody who worked with someone who was the subject of rumors. Because it's just, Hollywood is a town that it's nothing but rumors. And while these rumors about Bryan Singer were pretty damning and pretty well documented, they were still in the realm of rumors. So I'm not going to damn him for taking a job with Bryan Singer. But I do feel like his his innocence act, his I never heard any of this stuff. That's what he's telling the press. He didn't know any of this. And I'm like, oh, come on, buddy.
That's bullshit.
The public knew this 10 years ago. Gawker was publishing stories about him.
And are you telling me?
I'm sorry. But if you want to say, listen, I'd heard the rumors.
Right.
I met the man and I had no reason to believe they were true. You know, if you want to go that line, fine.
Just make a statement that makes sense.
You
know, regardless what position you choose. But just be honest.
And I have to say, it made me I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
It made me re-examine. We defended Meryl last year when she said essentially the same thing. And part of the reason we defended her was because she was becoming the subject of like a witch hunt. First off, it was like this right-wing witch hunt that went after her. They were buying like billboards in Los Angeles claiming that she knew what was going on, like trying to indict her.
Right.
And there was a movement at the time with Me Too to basically just turn on all the women and blame them instead of blaming Harvey Weinstein or the system that granted him so much power. But so, yes, we defended her from this last year based on that sort of background. But when I heard Rami Malek give exactly the same defense, I realized what bullshit it was. And it was bullshit when Meryl said it, too.
Right.
I'm not indicting Meryl. This isn't her fault. She does not need to get any blowback in her career. But a bit of honesty would have been, yes, I heard rumors about Harvey. I didn't have the
right.
full story.
Especially
like,
because
that's fine.
Right. Especially because he wasn't like a ghost on set. He directed the movie. He directed like 2/3 of the movie, right?
Brian Singer, they fired him 3 weeks before
right.
and, the movie ended.
And there are stories of him fighting with everybody.
Most of it.
And there are stories of him fighting with Rami and Malek and everybody else. So are you telling me that never at any point
right.
the whole thing came, you know?
Especially since while this was going on, while the shoot for Bohemian Rhapsody was going on, there was press about how it was a tumultuous shoot and Singer
right.
was disappearing for days at a time and fighting with people. And could it be that his past is catch? I mean, it was in the press about
right.
the movies. So for Rami Malek, I get it, buddy. You're on your first Oscar campaign and good for you. But a little honesty here would go a long way. And all you really have to say, I don't know, I can't speak for the public or the Academy. I don't know how this would be received. But for me personally, just a simple, I heard the rumors. I had no verification of them. So I chose to work with him because he's a talented director. Whatever. And then denounce the charges and move on. But this, I didn't know. I had no way of knowing. Don't do this.
Right.
Don't do that. You work in a system and you may as well acknowledge that you work in that system.
Right. And there's no way you didn't know anything. Come on.
Agreed. But you know, I feel like we should transition into some happy talk.
Yes.
Because this portion of the podcast is being sponsored by the lovely folks at Joybird. Have you heard about the revolution in online furniture shopping and Joybird, the company behind it all? Joybird believes that you should never settle when it comes to your home furnishings and that you should always have the freedom to be boldly original. From idea to reality, they empower you to create the space and furniture that brings you joy. With Joybird, you get one-of-a-kind furniture made to your unique taste. You can turn your ideas into reality with hundreds of styles and options. There's a wide range of kid and pet-friendly upholstery options available, from mid-century modern to contemporary classics, customizable in an amazing array of fabric choices, from rich buttery leather and plush velvets to every color imaginable. And there's a free personal design consultant to help nail down your perfect design. This is quality, handcrafted furniture. Each Joybird piece is made by hand with care and precision using high-quality hardwood and responsibly sourced materials to fit your exact specifications. And there's a limited lifetime warranty included. Plus, there's a 365-day home trial. You can skip the furniture store and bring the showroom home. Sit on it, sleep on it, and break it in. If you don't love your Joybird, return for a full refund. There's a hassle-free in-home delivery. They'll even remove all the packing materials. Come on, people. Free returns within 2 weeks of delivery. So, see how Joybird is revolutionizing online furniture shopping. Create the furniture that brings you joy today at joybird.com/Lorenzo.
Oh.
That's joybird.com/Lorenzo, L-O-R-E-N-Z-O. Go to joybird.com/Lorenzo and receive an exclusive offer for 25% off your first order. That is 25% off your first order by using the code Lorenzo.
Oh.
Tell Joybird that Lorenzo sent you. Okay, so anything else you want to say on Bryan Singer?
No, I think I'm done. Yeah.
I think I'm done too. Gross. We denounce. Get thee behind us, Satan. All of that stuff. I would love to see a full reckoning in the court system against this man and have it play out. But the last thing I want to see is him getting more work until this is resolved. So this whole thing about him being... we should mention that GLAAD, the GLAAD Awards.
Oh, yes, yes,
Gay
yes.
Lesbian Alliance Against Anti-Defamation.
Removed.
Removed him.
The movie, yeah.
Removed Bohemian Rhapsody for consideration for any awards this year. So that's done. Which was the right thing to do, the smart thing to do. So that's all we have to say on that?
Yes. We just said that we don't have anything else to say. Yes.
What?
We just said that. We don't have anything else
I'm
to say.
I'm just checking with bitch. All right. So moving on. Let's talk about... It doesn't come out for another week on Netflix, but it's Natasha Lyonne's new series, Russian Doll, which comes out on Netflix. They just had the premiere. We featured some of the pictures this week, and we opted to check our screeners. We haven't had a lot of time to check our screeners lately, but...
I know.
Because it was eight episodes, and they're only less than a half hour long, and because personally on my part, because I had just finished a heavy writing project and I just wanted to get sucked into something, I wound up watching the whole series, the whole eight episodes.
You did? Wow.
Yeah, I finished it last night.
Oh, wow.
If you've listened to, for any length of time, you know that I actually don't like binge watching all that much. It's not something I tend to do, but I did binge my way through this. It's a really interesting story. It's a really arresting story. We're kind of prevented from giving too many details, but the trailer essentially gives away the fact that it is a spin on Groundhog Day, where Natasha's character is reliving the same night over and over and over again. Before I get any further into it, and I don't want to give away too many... any spoilers, in fact, I'm going to turn it over to you because you actually only saw the first two, so you can give your impressions of the aesthetic.
Right. The first episode, I was like, I'm not so sure if I like this. It was kind of a little slow for me at parts, but I thought that the script was very intelligent. The writing was great. The lines were great. And it really depicted that life in New York.
Of a certain class of people.
Yes, of course. Always. And they were just great. Some interesting characters. I'm in love with Greta. I guess her name is Greta Lee. Her character's name is Maxine.
She's really funny.
She is very funny. She's one of her friends, Natasha's friends. I thought it was great. I thought it was very, very interesting. And then I watched the second episode, and then it explained a lot. As you keep watching it, yeah, it keeps adding more details, more interesting turns and twists.
Exactly. It's a series that does actually suck you in with little turns and twists and little hints and clues about what's going on. I don't want to give much more away than that because there are so many twists and turns. And about four episodes into it, the story introduces something that takes it in a completely different direction. So... being careful of all that, I just want to stick with the fact that it is very New York. We talked about this. It had that New York's. I don't even think most New Yorkers talk like this anymore. But it had that very New York-y style of dialogue, very witty, very fast-paced, with a million references flying at any time. It had a very Gen X feel to it. Gen X / millennial. She's on the cusp, but she's a millennial. She turns 36 in the story. And it deals with that. And Natasha has a history, of addiction. She's gone through a bunch of difficulties in her own life. It's all very well documented. And the only reason I bring that up is because it informs her work very much. It very much informed her work on Orange is the New Black, and it very much informs her work on this, which in the end, this isn't really giving anything away, it becomes a metaphor for mental health. And it examines her own mental health and the history of mental health in her family through this device. It lit literally uses the terms of therapy to work her way through what is essentially a kind of science fiction story, because she's reliving the same day, or a supernatural story.
Right.
Reliving the same day over and over again. But I would, my sister's a therapist. Sometimes she listens to this podcast, and I would love to hear her thoughts on it, because it dramatizes the very idea of therapy and layers it over this story.
Right.
Sometimes I feel the stuff that that happens in that regard is a little heavy-handed, a little literal. It makes certain concepts in therapy, like you have to let go of your childhood, literal. And sometimes that gets hammered. That's in the middle and closer to the end of the series, where it really has to start wrapping things up and all of her problems come tumbling out at once.
But I do like also the way the... Oh, go ahead.
I didn't mean
to interrupt. I do like the way the time loop is played. It's not very, very exactly... It's not exactly the same
time and time again,
because that gets boring. They keep adding elements. They keep adding characters. They keep adding subtlety.
What I like is that she figures out stuff at about the same time you as the viewer start figuring
out. Which is awesome.
Yeah, you're like at about the point where you're thinking, well, why doesn't she do this? She does that, you know, and that's smart writing. So you feel like you're just in the story with her. She does. She gives a great performance. It's a very twitchy, very Natasha style of performance. And she was not my favorite cast member on Orange is the New Black. I don't have a problem with her, but she is a lot to take. Her persona is a lot to take. And much like her character on Orange is the New Black, her character here is not likable. Not really. I mean, you're rooting for her, but then you just see how much she is to deal with.
Definitely recommend.
But I just want to conclude by saying, but she overcomes all that as a performer. She is in the end likable, and you are rooting for her very, very much, and you feel very bad for what she has gone through. So I think she absolutely does her job as an actress. She co-wrote and produced this.
Right.
She directed the finale, so she is in it. This is a very personal work for her, and I think it comes out very clearly that it is. And that, I think, is all we're going to say on that, because I really am trying to be a good boy and not piss Netflix off. And
I know.
And there are twists and turns here. So I'll just say that I do recommend it. It gets literal in ways that might be a little annoying. Because of the repetition, you wind up spending time with a lot of people who have a lot of problems, who keep doing the same problem. You know what I mean? Like, there's addiction issues and bad relationships that keep coming up again and again and again. And as a viewer, you're like, okay, this is starting to get tedious. But I do feel it pays off. I'm really processing the payoff of the series, of the season. I hope it's done. I hope there isn't a season two. And I love that the ending was done in such a way that your mind can go off and write what happens next, because it leaves certain things open for you. Anyway, Tilo recommended.
Yes,
that's
yes,
Russian
yes.
Doll. It drops on Netflix February 1st. I think we should take a short break.
Yes.
And when we come back, you're going to talk about your latest...
My latest Netflix
foreign
thing.
Language TV obsession. And then we're just going to dive a little bit into the Oscar nominations and some of the snubs and blah,
yes.
blah, blah. We'll be right back.
Talking celebrities, pop culture, TV, and fashion. This is Tom and Lorenzo's Pop Style Opinion Fest.
We are back on the Opinion Fest, and we've been chatting about the scandal of the week, Bryan Singer, and then a little bit about the Russian Doll series dropping on Netflix next week. But Lorenzo's here to tell you about his latest.
Yes!
It's not a foreign language TV program, and I am happy to announce that I actually introduced him
to this show. Was busy on my computer, and I kept listening.
You heard these thick, thick Northern Irish accents coming out of your TV. What is that?
Irish accent drives me crazy. So, anyway.
Go, because I only saw the first episode, and Lorenzo has way more to say about it. It's Derry Girls. It's the latest on Netflix from, it's a Northern Ireland comedy series that I believe has won all kinds of awards over
Oh
there.
My God, it's huge. It's I was a big reading hit. I was reading all the articles.
We have friends in Northern Ireland. Now I want to like email them and be like, so tell me about this show. All right, go ahead.
And the funny thing is that it's so huge, so big now in Europe and in Ireland that the city is actually going to have a mural.
Oh, Jerry's going to do a mural?
Yes, they're going to do a mural with all the students. It's going to be this huge-ass mural.
Explain.
Anyway, Derry Girls, as Tom was saying, I was on my computer, and he was watching, I guess, the first episode, and I, you know, every time I hear someone with an Irish accent, I'm like, boom!
Lorenzo speaks Gaelic. Fun fact.
Yes, I studied Gaelic for many years. I was always interested in the language. So I love the accent. I love Irish everything.
I am, of course, Irish descendant.
Yes, I obsess with Irish
state
anything.
Champion Irish step dancer in my age group.
Yes,
when I was 10 years old.
Yeah,
so
pictures to prove.
I'm walking the walk. Got the Irish tattoos on. Got the whole thing going on.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Anyway, so it's called Derry Girls. It's about five high school students, and in, as you said, Northern Ireland, in the 90s. And it's all about the political conflict, everything that is going on politically at the time, and the lives of the students. So, first of all, the reason why I love the show so much is because, A, it's hysterical in a very, very European way. And by that, I mean the types of jokes and the way they deliver the jokes are completely different. The way they do it in European shows.
Right.
Especially shows from Ireland or England. And what the students are hilarious. The lines are hilarious. And what I love about the show, too, is the fact that it reminded me a lot about Lady Bird, for example. You know, the movie Lady Bird. Because it's about teenagers acting like teenagers. I know I've watched shows like Riverdale and all these shows, and to me those kids don't act like they're normal kids. You know, they just don't. They act like they. To me, most of the shows in America with teenagers, they all talk to me. They talk like adults. They don't talk like teenagers.
I agree.
And that's what I love about Derry Girls is that they act and talk like teenagers, all of them. And there's something about English and Irish shows, to me at least, that they do such a fantastic job depicting lower middle class and lower class.
Working class families.
Oh my God, they do such a phenomenal job. They act like they are, you know, working people, working class people.
Exactly.
And I love that. It's such a juicy, I don't know, slice of life to me. You know, it's just the way.
Juicy.
I know,
that's
I just love it.
Not a word used in TV reviewing enough.
I just love it. The show is hysterical. They're all funny, and love it. I absolutely love it. And I think they're half an hour episodes. I believe they're short. They're not, or maybe
yeah,
maybe
they're
not
about a half hour. I only watched the first and part of the second. I couldn't. Like, I just had too much to do that I couldn't get sucked into it. But I will catch up on the
rest
of
it. It is a great show. Great show.
I
very,
heard
very
you
funny.
Laughing your ass off
it's
about it.
It's very funny. Well, the first episode, I was, as usual, I'm trying so hard to understand what they're saying. You know, the first 15 minutes, the first 20 minutes is always hard. I'm like, what? And then you get used to the accent. And then the main character, I mean, there are like five students, but there's, you know, I think Saoirse Monica Jackson is the blonde girl. She's like pretty much the main character, and she's hysterical. They're all hysterical. There's a boy, although it's an all girl school. It's just funny, funny, funny. I highly recommend it. I posted on Twitter, and people like my suggestion. They're already saying they liked it, so I recommend it for our listeners.
Fantastic! I definitely want to catch up on it. We're staying on TV for a little while. I want to talk a little bit about the Rent Live costumes,
and
that's coming out this Sunday. And I thought we would run down the RuPaul's Drag Race season 11 queens, just real quick, and give our thoughts on the looks and the names and whatever.
Well, general impression first. What do you?
You want to do the drag queens first? Okay.
Just general impression. I don't want to get into details
threw me
of each.
Off. All right. For one, and this is not necessarily these queens' fault, but these promotional shots reduce them all down to the same style of drag, so they all look alike.
The half of them look like Aquaria.
The Aquaria effect is in effect.
It's really
strong. Like Ariel Versace, I've heard of her before because she's a Cherry Hill girl. She's not that far from us. Very much in the Aquaria mode.
They all look like somebody.
Not a good picture of her. I've seen her work, and she can serve up some sickening looks, and that's not actually that good. Which brings me back to my point. I don't like the way they style them for these promo shots. Mm-hmm. It doesn't feel like them. Go ahead.
Every single one of them remind me of
another queen.
Of another queen from the past. So from past seasons.
Yeah.
And that's not a good thing.
It's not a good thing. And
you kind of banking on somebody else's success.
Well, a lot of these are daughters of drag mothers who, I mean, the Montrese family is well represented here. So you're going to see, like, Kahana Montrese actually does remind me of Coco.
Right.
So there is that aspect of it. There's a legacy aspect being played out here. So you kind of have to take that into account, but you also have to take into account that the common criticism that people in the drag community have, or people who follow the drag community closely have about Drag Race, is that it's reducing and narrowing the definition of drag into whatever Drag Race does.
Right.
So now all the queens who appear on Drag Race look like Drag Race queens,
because
that's how you're successful. That's how you make the money.
Well, I'm rooting already for the Korean queen.
I'm also rooting for Silky Nutmeg.
Oh my God, she is trouble, and she's trouble.
I know she's trouble.
Because VH1 had the idea of introducing them on YouTube,
right.
Which was interesting and boring at the same time because it took forever,
right,
to introduce every single one of them, and they had to do some silly game thing. And anyway, but it was nice because it gave you an idea of who they are,
right?
And she was phenomenal. She was so funny. In terms of looks, the Korean queen, what is
Soju?
I love that.
Well, first off, that look is gorgeous,
and it's the whole K-pop.
It's like
culture.
K-pop slash anime.
Yes.
Superhero look. It looks, the colors are amazing on her. She stands out amongst these queens because she doesn't look like Aquaria.
Right. In terms of visuals, she's fantastic. The video on YouTube, I wasn't so crazy about,
like
the way she talked, and I didn't see much there. But visually, stunning.
Yeah. I know this is very old school, but I did like Scarlet Envy's
look. Oh, my
look.
God. Yes.
First off, because it is old school. At this point, old school is a twist because they're all coming out looking like past queens.
Right.
So someone coming out looking like a classic queen from like the 60s and doing it really well. Well, all right. Let's see what you got, especially if you have talent to back that up. Again, all the ones that stand out with having some form of unique look are the ones that I'm noticing. Who else? Yeah, Mercedes Iman Diamond. She looks like a million other. I don't mean to reduce these queens down. For all I know, their own looks are more original.
Right.
But when they put them in front of the RuPaul's Drag Race logo, boy, they all are just serving up glamour drag because that's all the show promotes. Not that I want to trash the show.
I'm still excited
love drag
to
race.
See
what do
they
you
bring.
Think about Miss Vanjie? Returning.
Well, it's a publicity stunt, you know.
She's not the first one. I actually do like her look. The thing is, I will see, she received all this attention and I guess a limited form of success without actually having to go through the competition because she went home in the first episode. And I'm curious to see if she understands why she became a meme.
And part of it
was because there's a certain level of... it's sort of an Alyssa Edwards thing where it works because she comes off unaware of how she's coming off.
Right.
You know what I mean? And if she's too self-aware of the Miss Vanjie thing, she's going to lose all her charm.
Well, again, back to the Vita's YouTube had interviews with them. I didn't see much there. I was like, you became very, very famous because you had a funny line when you left the stage. But I don't know if you have it. If you really have it in you to, I don't know, to do a good job. We'll see.
I'm always excited. I'm happy to see, even if they're not all that fresh, a fresh crop, fresh faces on the show because we're going through All-Stars right now, which I'm enjoying All-Stars, but it's all queens we've seen before.
Right.
It's always nice to see new ones. And maybe some of these queens will break out looks or styles that will shock or surprise us, which would be a pretty great thing.
Right.
So anyway, that's our thoughts on that.
Excited.
Yes. Next is, he's giving me the wrap it up thing, and I'm like, bitch, what? I just want to talk briefly. Rent Live is coming this Sunday. We do have a post on the costume, so I'm actually kind of repeating what's being said in that post, which is that they released these images this week, and I was like, oh, well, they're all dressed exactly like the Broadway show. And, you know, you can take the argument that that's a classic approach, and that's, you know, blah, 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 blah.
Right.
But, you know, it's not like when they mount Cabaret, every actress comes out looking like Liza Minnelli. You know what I mean? They actually do freshen up the look, make it a little different over time. And it has been over 20 years since Rent, you know, debuted on Broadway. It had a very mediocre film in which they tried to recreate the Broadway show, and it didn't work because it's not something you can recreate without interpreting it a little bit.
Right.
And then these costumes come out. It's the same costume designer from the Broadway show. God bless her. She's very talented. And
Oh, okay.
She didn't bring anything new, literally. She just redid the work she did 20-some-odd years ago.
And if you look at the one they did, the Jesus Christ Superstore, I mean, the costumes were different.
Yeah, they updated it.
Right,
they interpreted
what I mean.
It.
Yeah, they do something different.
I'm fearful that they're just going to try a straight adaptation of Rent, which has been tried. And I have always felt that it was the kind of show that if you were going to mount it on video or mount it on TV or mount it in film, you had to rethink certain staging choices and definitely rethink certain acting choices, because Rent is very broad. The acting in Rent is extremely broad and melodramatic, which fits the storyline, fits the music, fits the characters, but doesn't always look great on screen. And that was part of the problem with the Rent movie. My main problem with the Rent movie was that everyone was 35 years old and looked it, which was a stupid thing to do because the whole story is about being young and not having any money. So when they were singing about not paying their rent, I was like, get a freaking job. You're 35. No, it's charming when it's 19-year-old artists
right.
who can't pay their rent, because that's the story. But when you cast 35-year-olds, it becomes completely something else. I have no problems with the cast. I like the cast. They look young. They're good looking. They're diverse. I just wish they had rethought the costumes. Now, Rent is supposed to be a period piece. It is supposed to be at the height of the AIDS crisis in New York, which places it in the late 80s, early 90s. But there's a lot you can do. You don't have to dress them like that. You know, why can't Roger have like a mohawk? He's a rocker. Why wouldn't he? So guys did back then. But none of that is rethought, and they all look pretty much exactly like the cast did when they stepped out in 1996. And I have to say, I was having some good thoughts about this, and now I'm like, we'll see. Valentina is portraying Angel the drag queen, which is fun casting, and I have no doubt she'll ace the song. But I saw the picture of her, and I was like, yeah, Angel is a street queen, so she pulls her stuff together.
Yes,
she pulls her stuff together from thrift stores and stuff. And
oh my God,
Angel has
same
this
reaction.
Flawlessly. I mean, Valentina has this flawlessly
it looks like
beat
an Oscar
face.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry. What?
No, go ahead. The costume. I was gonna say whatever she's wearing. It looks like an Oscar de la Renta dress. It doesn't even look like something.
Well, it is sort of what Angel wore, but it's more upscale. She's got these long leather gloves, and her face is perfect. And I'm like, yeah, that's not quite right. I mean, Angel's literally a street queen. She plays drums on the street. She's not some fashion queen from RuPaul's Drag Race. So we'll see. We'll see.
I agree.
I hate to sound so grumpy. We're going to probably have a review or at least live tweet it as it
goes on.
I know that the SAG Awards are also that night. So we'll have a very busy Monday morning, I'm sure. Anyway, those are our TV thoughts. What else are we transitioning to? Oh, Oscar nominations.
The Oscars.
Go ahead. I have just done a lot of talking. Give me your thoughts.
I thought it was interesting. Some nominations were very expected. Some I was actually surprised, and some are just like, really? I'm not gonna list all of them, but I don't know, like supporting actress Emma Stone and Rachel Weisz. I mean, they were main characters.
They were always being pushed as the supporting.
They're doing this now. Yeah,
because otherwise you have three lead actresses from the same movie competing for the lead actress Oscar, which is kind of a disaster.
And let me just say something, and people are going to hate me probably for this, but I worship Roma. I think it's one of the most beautiful movies I've seen in a long, long time. But supporting actress for Marina de Tavira and leading actress for Yalitza, I don't think so. Sorry, no. They were great, but not that great. I think people are just drinking too much of the Roma Kool-Aid and just handing nomination for every single category of Roma.
Right.
It's nice.
They're a long shot. Neither of them are going to win.
Right.
Of course.
It's a great representation. It's a non-white person, you know, being nominated. And there's the whole. It's a great moment. But I was a little surprised that they were both nominated. Anyway. That's my surprise there. Foreign language film, I'm sure Roma is going to win, even though everyone knows that Shoplifters is a phenomenal movie. If it wasn't for Roma, Shoplifter would probably win. But who knows? Maybe Shoplifter will win.
What do you think about Bradley Cooper being snubbed for Best Director? I already know what you think, because you didn't like that movie at all.
I hated everything about that movie, so I don't have anything positive to add.
Isn't he terrible? He's terrible.
I hated everything about the movie.
I think A Star Is Born deserves recognition for what it is, which is an extremely, extremely well-made classic Hollywood motion picture in the most classic sense. It was made with great care, and it was made by someone who really knew what he was doing and how he wanted to get it across. So I don't mind that it gets nominations. And I mean, Cooper has already picked up some awards, but when you lay it out against everything else that's up this year, I really don't see any reason why it should sweep the Oscars. I certainly don't think Gaga is
going to win.
I'm happy that she got the nomination, because I really do think it was a star-making turn in a huge film. She did something that no other actress was going to be able to do way she did it.
Right.
So
I knew she was going to be nominated.
Yeah, I'm happy for her nomination, but I would actually be annoyed if she won.
I know. I think it'll be Glenn Close.
Or Olivia Colman.
It's probably Olivia Colman.
It's pretty much down to those two.
The whole thing with the favorite is interesting, because it's kind of a love or hate type of reaction. People love the movie, people hate the movie. So it's interesting to see the favorite
getting
so many nominations.
I absolutely loved it.
I loved the movie, and we've seen I've seen it like 5 times.
Right.
Love it. I'm happy to see Melissa McCarthy nominated for Can You Ever Forgive Me?
That's another one. What is her name? Marielle Heller, the director of that movie, was not nominated.
Yeah.
She's a woman, so...
No, of course not.
Can You Ever Forgive Me is absolutely one of my favorite films of this year.
I agree.
And Richard E. Grant and Melissa McCarthy, two of my favorite performances. I really, truly adored everything about that film. Not so sure any of them have chances. I'm pretty sure Melissa McCarthy has no shot. Richard E. Grant might. He might actually have a shot at it. But a real shame that they could not recognize the director of that film. It really sticks with you. My God, she makes some choices in that film. She directs her actors in a certain way, and she recreates a slice of queer 1990s New York that does not exist anymore. And it's all very subtle and deftly done. Very, very talented. And
it's a very, very good movie.
And it's a real shame she did not get a Best Director.
I totally agree.
I'm annoyed that Adam McKay got a Best Director nod for Vice, because I really think that movie in the end was all a cartoon.
Again, Vice is another movie that they're just buy into it.
I'm not even going to get into the politics of it.
Right.
And Sam Rockwell got Best Supporting Actor for his George W. Bush impersonation, and please no.
Right.
It was a fun impersonation. It was actually probably the best one I've ever seen, and he does look a lot like him in the makeup, but it was mimicry, and it was actually a very small part in the movie. All he did was come on and do Saturday Night Live bit in a couple scenes, and then he was out. So the idea that he get nominated for that is just very silly to me. If Beale Street Could Talk,
yes,
did not get
recognized.
And of course, Green Book did and is on track to win it. And there's this whole discussion going on about the Academy's very outmoded view of how black films or films starring black actors should get recognized. Green Book, whatever else you think of it, is a very old-fashioned film that centers racial issues around the experiences of a white character. And that style of film is not really in style anymore, which is why the film has had such a problematic run.
Right.
And it doesn't help that the press for the film has been pretty... I'm not even getting into all the reasons why. Not just Viggo, but the screenwriter of the film has got some color in his background as well. But If Beale Street Could Talk is a beautiful representation of Black life and a stunning debut for certain actors. And it's Barry Jenkins continuing the fine work he did in Moonlight. And it really just didn't get the recognition that it should have gotten. But we follow film Twitter, like we're in on film Twitter. So we see all the arguments raging and have been raging for months. And I have to say, this year, I'm really sick and tired of everyone arguing about these and politicizing every movie. I know we live in a political time and movies are not created in a vacuum. All art is political in some way. And I certainly am not suggesting that we should just all shut up for a while about politics. But everything lives or dies. People are just denouncing these films. Like, okay. Bohemian Rhapsody whitewashes Freddie Mercury's queerness. And of course, there's the whole Bryan Singer thing that we got into. But I don't need to denounce anyone's career over it. And if Rami Malek wins an Oscar for this, I'll shrug and move on. Green Book, that's a little harder to accept because it is kind of a backwards looking film. But again, the Academy is not and never has been a forward looking body. It has never been. It's always been conservative in its thinking, traditional in its thinking, and tries to reward art that is not... the deepest pieces don't get rewarded every year. The most meticulously artistic pieces do not get awarded every year. The entire history of the Academy plays out that way. So we can all get into these arguments and get all upset about what's nominated, what's not, what wins and what doesn't. But it's just a game. It's just a PR game. It always has been.
I agree. What do you think of costume design? Black Panther, obviously.
If she doesn't win, I think that is a complete joke. That is joke. There's a lot of great costume design in that category.
The favorite, Mary Queen of Scots and Mary Poppins Returns.
All great. Sandy Powell did Mary Poppins Returns and The Favorite. She's very talented. She's won several Oscars. Both of those are gorgeous. And she did amazing interpretive work in them.
However,
Ruth E. Carter created an entire freaking culture out of all of the cultures of the African continent. That is a stunning achievement. And then she moved it forward into like the 25th century to make it all futuristic and fantasy based. Something that, who has done that on film? Who has done that on film? There's been a Mary Poppins movie. There's been a million movies about English royalty. But what Ruth E. Carter did has never been done. And she showed us things that we've never seen. That woman deserves every award they can shower on.
Were you surprised that Emily Blunt didn't get a nomination?
No, because I really liked her performance, but the critics, when the film came out, it was kind of lukewarm, and I could see that the field was really competitive. So I was like, no, she's not going to get it.
She didn't get the buzz. The thing. A lot of big names and great performances. In her character.
I'm not that upset about it.
Best Picture. Which one would you?
Let me scroll down. I'm looking at Best Picture.
Black Panther.
Black Panther or Black Klansman, because, you know, Spike Lee definitely deserves. Black Panther, Black Klansman.
And The Favorite.
You don't think Roma? Roma is beautifully directed.
Yes, but Roma is also nominated for Best Language Film, and that's what they're going to win.
And Cuarón is for directing. So
yeah, I think it's going to be Best Language Film for Roma, not Best Picture.
If I really, really had to nail it down, I would probably say either Black Panther or The Favorite.
Can you imagine
Black Panther?
But
it's hard for me to say, oh no, not Black Klansman. You know, Spike Lee, like, that's really hard for me to... It's really hard. I'm glad I don't have to vote on this.
And the original song, obviously, is going to be Shell. I mean,
yeah, I guess it is going to be Shallow. I think it probably should be Shallow.
What do you think of this thing with the Oscars?
They're not going to have this. I don't even know what those queens... What is going on over there?
In that office? Like, I have no idea what's
suddenly
going on.
They can't figure out how to do an Oscar show. They've been doing them for 80 freaking years.
And they're falling apart.
They're completely falling apart. I've been saying this every year. People watch for three things. They watch the Oscars for three things. the fashion, the songs, and the movie clips. And as long as you've got all of that center stage, you can put on a 3-hour show. Like, I don't even see why this is hard.
Right. What's the argument? I didn't read anything.
There's all kinds of weird. Well, the whole Kevin Hart thing fell apart, and now they're all skittish, which is just silly.
So Lady Gaga's not going to sing.
I don't even know what the deal is. All I did was read this morning was that not everyone is going to sing at the Oscars. And I was like, okay, you people are so dumb if you don't let Lady Gaga sing.
Right. And then if she sings, then
Kendrick
the other ones
Lamar,
are going to complain,
you know,
that
for
they.
The Black
yeah.
Panther song.
Right.
Come the hell on, people. What is wrong with you?
Cutting time.
I think they should just
know.
Turn it over to us and it should become a Tom and Lorenzo production. We'll get this shit done. I'll tell you what. Seriously, just do clips of who died that year. They always love that stuff. Then have Lady Gaga come out and sing. Have Kendrick Lamar come out. Have everyone perform their winning, you know, their nominated songs.
I agree.
Show big clips from every movie and every nominated performance. Done. And then just hand out trophies. How is this hard? Anyway.
We forgot to talk about leading actor. Bradley Cooper was nominated.
And Kristen Bale. I don't mind that. Oh, and actually, supporting actor, I kind of want Sam Elliott to win that.
Right, right. That was great. His performance was great.
His performance was, honestly, he's got a long career behind him, but it was, I think, his best performance.
It was a very good performance.
Leading actor, I don't love any of these. I didn't see Willem Dafoe's performance.
Right.
Or I didn't see that film. Oh, that is that the one where he plays Picasso? Yeah. I mean, not Picasso. Van Gogh.
Van Gogh, yes.
Which, he's twice the age Van Gogh was when he died. I don't know. Just strikes me it's such a ridiculous...
It's going to be Christian Bale or Rami Malek.
Yeah, I don't know. The Bohemian Rhapsody Bryan Singer thing might blow back too hard against Rami.
True.
Christian Bale has an Oscar.
And people love
Bradley Cooper was snubbed, so he might get it. He might get Best Actor for that, which would be weird. Of all the things to get, you're going to get Best Actor for that.
Right, right.
I don't know. We'll see. Is there anything else you want to say about the Oscars?
No.
What a mess, though. What is wrong with those queens?
I know. I can't wait to see what's going to happen because I don't know.
It sounds like it's going to be an utter disaster. It sounds like it's going to be boring as hell.
Right.
But we'll see. Anything else?
No, I think that's it.
Well, then why don't you say a goodbye to our lovely friends out there?
Yes, well, we would like to thank you. Thank all of you for your support, for listening to us, and for reading our site, and follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, everywhere.
Yada.
Just don't follow us home.
Yada. Agreed. And I promise we will stop teasing you about what's coming soon. We will be making an
announcement. I know, but that's the way it goes. You can't talk about it.
Thank you again for all of your support, kittens. And we'll be back next week with more opinions on all things pop culture and fashion. So, bye-bye.
Bye.